You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
All right, and we are back at the Good Food Awards, the DC Mercantile Good Food Awards. It's a lovely Sunday afternoon here. We're continuing to drink what we're calling now Deathmoses, which started out as Black Mimosas, a little activated charcoal lemonade and kava. Never hurt anybody on a Sunday, but this is Heritage Radio Network. Jack Inslee with Katie Moserman.
Nice to see you all again. And we have another very special guest host with us today, Allison Hamlin. Hi.
Hey guys. What's up?
We also have another radio person we just found out. We thought it was just vegan snacklins, but...
It's a mix of everything. I just also want to thank you guys first up for the Deathmosas. Also, don't feel bad. I have literally... I've been calling it like the good health, the food health. And I finally just wrote it on my hand, so I know it's the Good Food Mercantile. It's tough. It's a lot. I try to put everything positive in there, you know? I'm like, the healthy angel unicorns mercantile. Like, nope, that's not it.
That's not
You're
it.
You're like,
that's
not it.
This is the voice of Sammy K of Snacklins.
This sounds a little like Dan Savage, actually.
GFM sounds like an LMFAO album. I'm not going to lie. I don't know what it would stand for, but I'll think of the acronym before the end of the
interview.
Okay,
all right. We're going to come back to you on that one.
Let's give you a proper intro, yeah? We are with Sammy K, who... actually, Katie, maybe you want to introduce the company that you actually pointed this out on the list as the most interesting interview of the day.
Yeah, this really called to me and our whole staff as we were going through the list of producers who are going to be here at the Good Food Awards. So Snacklins is, get this, vegan pork... Rind cracklins. Is that right?
It makes zero sense, but that's exactly what it is. It is a vegan chicharron, a scratching, a cracklin, a pork rind, whatever you want to call it. We are the vegan version of that.
So you probably get this a lot, but I have a lot of questions about this.
Tons. I'm ready. I got all the answers. Okay. It's actually way more simpler than people think. So
first of all, though, are you a vegan, Sammy?
I don't know if you can tell by my beautiful physique, but the answer would be a no for that one. But I do support that. I think, like, you know, I like to eat healthy. I try to eat as healthy as possible. But, you know, I'm not going to turn down a sweet pizza any
right.
day of the week. So,
because you have a background. We learned a little bit just now about your radio background, but you have a background as a barbecue chef, right?
That's actually my business partner, Logan.
Oh, okay.
Has a background as a barbecue chef. I have a background in radio. The two of us were just hanging out one night at his barbecue restaurant, perhaps partaking in some things. And then he was like, dude, what if we made a vegan pork rind? And I was like, genius, let's do it. And a year later, this joke has gotten way out of hand. And now we're here interviewing on the Heritage Radio Network, and we don't really know what's going on.
So what is it?
Okay, it's actually, so it is, you look at it from the outside, it is going to look like a pork rind, right? But we just wanted to make a really healthy, plant-based, like, snack chip that you could enjoy. So it's literally just mushrooms, onions, and yuca. Only
wow.
three ingredients. Just three ingredients, GMO-free, guilt-free, gluten-free, meat-free.
How did you get the guilt out?
The guilt, that was, we actually paid a designer to get that out for us. So
oh, wow.
You pay the right designer for your packaging, they'll get rid of anything for
can
you.
Can he handle okay. my life? Because that would be great.
Oh, Alexis will hook you up, man. Yeah, she'll
All
hook
right,
you up.
All right, cool. I'm going to, we'll be in touch on that.
Yeah.
Are they fried?
They are. They're going to be flash fried for a hot second, so
yeah.
That's kind of how you get that puff. But it's, yeah, it was honestly, like, it was a year and a half of us just experimenting. We had a million failures until finally one day it worked. I believe it was, like, in the middle of the day, I just started screaming from the basement of the barbecue restaurant. Logan thought I'd burned myself. He ran down and realized, oh, my God, we actually got this. And right place, right time, and, like, we just decided to put them in bags. I don't know. It's, like we said, it's a joke that got out of hand. And
do you have any background in food?
I like working kitchens. I've worked, like, on the line at a bunch of different restaurants in D.C. just for fun. But Logan's the actual chef. I'm the radio guy. So.
Okay.
Food radio. This is, like, the best food radio interview
it's
ever.
It's fun. I mean, I'll tell you what. Like, when I tell people, they're like, I'm a Muslim from Iowa, right? And he's, like, a country boy from Arkansas. And we're making vegan pork rinds in the nation's capital. Like, none of this makes sense.
This is, like, a Frankenstein of all.
It does.
You're like, it's alive somehow, and we're feeding it with vegan pork rinds until, like, something happens.
We tell people it's like a Mad Lib, you know what I mean? Like, in our bio, it just sounds like a Mad Lib. Someone just yelled out, Muslim, all right? I'm a country boy. And like, all right, what's next? Give me a product. vegan pork rinds. Like, it just it sounds made up, so... It just sounds like a Mad Lib.
How's the reception been?
People love them. Here's the thing is also, like, beyond that, it is a vegan pork rind, yes. But really the thing about it is we want to make a healthy snack chip. And it's 60 calories for a whole bag of chips, you know?
Well, damn.
Potato chips, can't even touch that. Let alone are they even potatoes anymore. Like, it's a mix of so much crap now that we're literally just mushrooms, onions, and yuca. A whole bag, 60 calories. You can eat 3 or 4 of them and still not feel bad about yourself, you know. And so that's kind of what we try to do. You know, it just happens to kind of look like a pork rind. Like, that has nothing to do with it. I'll tell you, I'm a horrible Muslim. I eat pork on the regular, so.
Yeah, I was going to ask, is it meant to mimic a pork rind?
It is meant to. Like, that was kind of our initial idea. And then we made them almost as a special for the restaurant. And then once we sent them out, like, to get them certain all the FDA stuff, the health information, we were like, holy shit, these are, like, mega healthy. Like, really healthy. Holy crap. And that was just kind of the surprise, and I think what helped us make it more of just us making them for his restaurant as a joke to, you know, selling at Whole Foods. Like, damn.
Yeah. So where else are they available? Whole Foods is one.
Whole Foods, Glen's Garden Market. We love them. They were our first retailer to get us. You guys are drinking your death mimosas are made with South Block. That juice, you can buy them at all the South Block locations. That's our boy over there, Amir. Yes, organic. And then you can always, if you just go to our website, snacklands.com, we list all of our national sellers as well. So anyone that sells them, we're slowly creeping out.
Where'd the name come from?
Again, we were partaking in maybe some funny extracurricular activities. And I was like, dude, Cracklins, but like snack. Snacklins. And just like hit you like that. Everyone's like, genius. And of course, we took a poll at the bar like at 12:30 in the morning.
You're like,
so
yo,
everyone
yo,
loved it.
Here?
And then we got all the social medias. We bought the website that night. And now we just kind of been stuck with the name. So yeah, we're Snacklins.
Well, it's a good thing you spelled it right.
Yeah, funny story actually is Snacklins. We actually had to go to court with Keebler over that name.
No way.
Like, they tried to release a snack chip, like a cheese cracker back in like the day in the 90s called Snacklins. And so when we applied for the trademark for Snacklins, we had to... Luckily, the elves, super cool, super chill. Even their lawyers are rad, so, you know, no issues. They were like, we're cool.
Out
we're
to Keebler.
Keebler's not trying to sell vegan pork rinds anytime soon.
Out
so.
To Keebler. You must wake up some days and be like, shocked that you actually run Snacklins. Like, that's your full-time
thing, I wake up
right?
a lot of days, my girlfriend just, like, give me the middle finger. She's like, ah, look at you, you're happy. You wake up when you want to. You pick your schedule. And I was like, yes. I can't believe vegan pork rinds did that. Like, you know, if you had talked to me years ago, I was doing radio and TV on the regular. I thought that's what my life was going to be. And then next thing I know, I'm here waking up day to day, shoving like 40 cases of Snacklins in the back of this crappy, like, Hyundai Accent we bought for $500. Like, we don't even have, like, it's the best car because we don't even have, like, a side view mirror. Two of the doors don't even open.
Uh-huh.
So I get to, like, shove them through the windows in the back seat and pull them out through the windows. You know, we're a small company just kind of growing as we go. And to us, it's a wild ride. We're just really honored and, I guess, blessed to be able to partake in
it. Do you miss radio at all?
No, because I get to hang out with cool people like you. So I can always talk and, you know.
Yeah.
My girlfriend, I think, misses me being in radio more than I do. Because I talk to her a lot more than I used to, because I don't have an audience to speak to every morning for like 5 hours. So now when she wakes up, I'm like, you're my audience. Dun, 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 dun. And she's just not a morning person like I am, but she's amazing. So
Snacklins sounds like a fairy tale.
It is.
Know, the story of your launch and the amazing discovery in the basement and everything, you know, it sounds like it's all gone really smoothly. Have there been any challenges or, like, great learning experiences that you've had getting this off the ground?
Well, I'll say, yeah. Like, I mean, Logan and I have no idea how to run a business. We have no idea how to do that. And so the one challenge that we really had was just figuring out, like, the back of house stuff, you know? Like, what goes on? How do we do this? How do you even get your non-GMO certification? How do you even go about getting new packaging? How do you go about doing this stuff? And so we actually got to team up, and I think the thing that most people can understand as a small business, the best thing to do is team up with other people in your same position, because they all have info. They maybe have just spent 3 months working on shipping, and they can give you that info, and it's like, yes. So like we teamed up with Union Kitchen. So our friends at Union Kitchen were part of their accelerator program, and they've been like taking care of us, I mean, helping us with all the background stuff. I don't know anything about owning a business.
Like the HCAP or what
is it? HCAP, there's all the certifications, taxes, all this crap. So finding other people that were going through the same struggles we did and kind of teaming up with them has really helped. Like, we have coffee once a month with us and a bunch of other, like, local business owners, and we just meet and we just go, shit, what are you dealing with this month? Oh, crap, here's what we're dealing with. And it's really nice.
It really, like, I just moved to D.C. in September, and the community is so strong. It really seems, like, unique to this city, all these incubators, and, like, you're saying, you know, do you feel that about D.C.?
It's awesome. Yeah. I mean, I've never been in, maybe it's just the other industries I've worked in my past, but I've never been in an industry that was so self-giving. Like, other companies come to us, they go, we love your Snacklins. So we posted a picture of our snack, you know, of our dip with a Snacklin in it on our Instagram. And I was like, that's awesome. Like, there's, like, support without you having to ask that. Like, it's not a business negotiation. Like, I'm used to having to negotiate, you know, me posting a Twitter comment on something, you know. And now it's just people like support. And we love to support the other guys around there. It's some amazing products that we've had a chance. I mean, I've become like a little product local whore, like, you know, recently. I just get a bunch of local stuff. I love a lot of the awesome products that they're offering.
I think that you have one of the most kind of unique and surprising products on the floor today at Mercantile. Is there anything else out there that was new to you or that you want to shout out?
Oh, I'm telling you, the one thing I was like, here at this Mercantile, I forgot their name, but it's the adult peanut butters, the adult nut butters, Elliot's adult nut butters. Now, that was awesome. They weren't there, so I just, like, snuck a little bit of the garam masala peanut butter. And
oh,
that
he was just talking about
jam.
That one. He was like, it's and got, I, like, some layers of flavor
oh,
in there.
Oh, it is so good. Like, layers upon layers. I like that. I like a lot of, like, really spicy, unique stuff. So I think if you have a snack, then you're going to realize, you know, it's like a healthy chip. It's got a lot of kick for what it is. I mean, that was really impressive to me. So I was actually, like, Googling it when I was back at my table trying to figure out where I could buy them, you know?
Dip some Snacklins in some garam masala
peanut butter.
I feel
like we got like an underground economy of like moving your barter trade at the good food Mercantile, the GFM, which you're on clock. Yeah, you got to get that back to us soon.
They should do like GFM chopped. You get like,
you have to like go get some like Righteous Felon jerky, some nut butter from Elliot's, and like two Snacklins. Like, all right, make us an appetizer.
Exactly.
Right. Except at the end, everyone will be like, no, yours was the best. Yours was the best.
No, I'm going to chop myself. I just don't feel like I was.
I just think we're all in this together.
We are.
High five, Power Rangers. Uh-huh. Yeah. I don't know, maybe.
By the way, anyone else stoked about the new Power Rangers movie?
I am incredibly excited about the new Power Rangers movie. Yeah.
Wait, did you hear they kicked the Green Ranger out of his own movie premiere?
What?
Like the original Green Ranger? Like
that
has,
dude
like,
has
got to
be like 40. Like
he has a cameo, and I guess in the middle of the premiere, before his cameo, he pulled out his phone to record it. And you can't film, even if it's you on the TV screen. Even you on the movie screen.
Oh, wow.
And so they kicked him out of the Power Rangers premiere. I know.
That's a crime.
God. I signed a petition in his honor, don't worry.
You should send him some products.
I'm going to send him some.
Like, as a consolation, here's some.
I will say, we sent some products, some pretty awesome. We got an email randomly, like, about 3 months ago from one of the producers of, like, Orange is the New Black. And they were, like, eating them on set, I guess. And so we, like, finally, like, they sent us pictures, and it was, like, the bad boss lady who's like she's like married to the governor guy or whatever, and she's like the head, like the prison warden. She's like crushing our Snacklins on set and shit. And I was just laughing. I was like,
wow.
No, damn.
You need to get that endorsement.
Yeah, whatever.
No, you've made it when you're like have a Netflix behind the scenes special.
Well, you also know you're wasting a lot of product because you know it's always free. Like they're not gonna buy it. You know,
oh, no,
you gotta send
like,
it to them. So
you're like photo op though. Photo op. Photo
catch
op.
Catch 22 there. Catch 22.
That's fair. That is fair.
All right.
All right. Awesome. Well, Sammy K, thank you so much for being with us on Heritage Radio Network today.
Well, thank you guys. And yeah, cheers.
Cheers.
Mimosas.
It's such a pleasure to meet
Mimosas.
You.
Mimosas. You're going to come back and tell us what GFM.
Oh, yeah. I gotta think. I'll think of GFM. Don't worry.
Okay. Come back. We'll get you to do a station drop on the way
interview.
Back.
I just got preoccupied.
It's okay. We forgive you this time.
It's all right. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay.
We'll be right back with our coverage here in just a bit.
Hey, like what you hear? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. With fresh programming every week, we've got something for everyone. Trying to start your own food business? Concerned about where your food comes from? Looking for the best wine or beer to bring to a party? Find our shows on iTunes or Stitcher, or head to heritageradionetwork.org to listen live and subscribe to our newsletter.
All right, here we are. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network and Full Service Radio at Good Food Mercantile Union Market, D.C. We're continuing our conversations. Our drink spread at the table has now evolved into Misfit Juice, Six Point Beer, Shrubs. Still got the activated charcoal lemonade and kava going on. But we're having a great time here, and we're about to get into a really deep fermentation conversation with two incredible guests in front of us. We have first Sarah Gordon of Gordy's Pickle Jar, also host of a new show on Full Service Radio. So I'm going to be the first one to introduce you as a radio host in the interview. Yeah? Where's your mic? Oh, nice and close. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. It's good to see you. Second guest we have here is Shane Carpenter from Hex Ferments. Welcome, Shane.
Happy to be here.
Awesome. So why don't you both just start off, give us the quick rundown. Who are you? Talk a little bit about your products. Maybe Sarah, you want to kick it off?
Yeah. So my name is Sarah Gordon. I'm with Gordy's Pickle Jar. Started the company here in Washington, D.C. about 5 years ago with my wife, Sheila Fain. And we do a line of pickles and relishes and a Bloody Mary mix. And we just came out with a great new product, Fine Brine, which you can find in a can.
It's very useful.
And I'm Shane Carpenter. My wife and I, Megan, started Hex Ferments 4 years ago or so. And we do all traditionally fermented vegetables, so sauerkrauts to kimchi, cucumber pickles, all from local organic farms. And then we also do uniquely balanced kombucha teas.
And so we're in D.C. today, so we have a lot of kind of local producers here. I'm wondering, are your products available in New York, or how far are you distributing?
Yeah, so our products, Gordy's Pickle Jars, available nationwide now with our partnership with a large grocery chain. But we're also in New York at a number of specialty stores. But we're heavily distributed in the DMV area, which is the District, Maryland, and Virginia.
Our creations are primarily Greater Baltimore, D.C. Yeah, that's pretty much where we're at. We're in about 70 or so locations, from small mom-and-pop places to Whole Foods.
Awesome. Yeah. So, Shane, what's your background before this? Did you work in food at all, or...?
Yeah, I mean, the interest lies in where food comes from. I worked on farms when I was young, grew up in the Midwest, in South Dakota, saw kind of what happened to family farms there, the large commodity crops sort of basically eliminated, farms across the street from us on the edge of town in Sioux Falls. I didn't really realize what was happening until much later in life. I went woofing around Europe, willing workers on organic farms. That was about 20 years ago now. Really enjoyed that, enjoyed the travel experience. And then when I was, came back and started environmental science. Didn't seem like the best fit. Started doing wildlife management and worked in Glacier National Park, following grizzly bears around and wolves. And that didn't quite seem like the best fit, but it was fun. Then I worked for the Forest Service in Arizona as a wilderness ranger. And then when I was there in Prescott, Arizona, I started working for a daily paper as a photographer. And that sort of like started this whole track in photography. And then worked for newspapers and magazines, and did a lot of editorial type of stuff and photojournalism. And that's kind of where I made my bread. And then I've always just been really interested in food and where it comes from. And this is the food that we made at our house. My wife and I deep into urban homesteading. Crocks of bubbling meads and beers and everything else.
It sounds like cat lives.
What's it?
Cat lives.
Cat lives?
Yeah.
What's
got
that?
A lot of lives.
Oh, yeah. Mostly just restless, you know. I skipped over a few, too. But yeah, just a constant interest. Both of us had some, you know, family illness, and our, you know, our, Megan's mom died when she was young. My dad died when I was young. A lot of it probably stemmed from, you know, environmental factors and food, and yeah, just find a lot of power in the healing of food. You know, stretching back to how it's grown and where it comes from, the health of the soil and the earth, and how people connect around the table. And our particular route in was through living foods, so fermented foods, and you know, the power they have in their transformation from the raw vegetable to the jar into our bodies, and yeah, beyond. The cycle continues. Wow, did I just totally ramble?
No, it was good.
It's funny. Too bad Megan's not here. She's usually like hitting my leg. She's like, she gives me the eye.
So then, Sarah, I imagine you grew up on farms in the Midwest. No, right?
Chasing beers. No. So my background's in branding and communications. My wife is an excellent cook. And we just kind of put our heads together and really wanted to bring something to market. So I focused on the branding of the product, and Sheila focused on developing the recipes. And there we had it. Gordy's was born.
But, like, growing up, were you doing kitchen experiments at home? Did you have a passion for that stuff, or, like, did you find it later?
No, I mean, I've always loved food, but I you wouldn't find me in the kitchen much unless someone else was preparing it, unfortunately. But, yeah, so my... I mean, yeah, so Sheila's more on the food side of it, and I'm more on the...
But, of course, you now have learned, I'm sure, so much, and I'm sure your palate's evolved.
Oh, yeah. I think I've always had been lucky with the palate, but now I find myself in the kitchen a lot more and, you know, learning new things every day from...
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, quickly... Wondering, like, what you both think about, I don't want to call it a trend necessarily, but so many people are doing home fermentation, whether it's, like, making kimchis or kombuchas and stuff. Why do you think that is? What do you take from that? What do you think is so special about that as, like, an activity at home, you know?
'Cause it's delicious and a lot of fun.
It's delicious.
Yeah, I mean, I would argue it's sort of... response to a lot of other larger trends that are moving in an opposite direction that involve mostly technology and disassociation with food and life in a lot of ways, that, you know, is bringing people closer to a lot of things that they may have been intentionally or unintentionally separated from. And yeah, we're big advocates. Yeah, trend is always a touchy word for something that's been around for thousands of years.
Right.
But a renewed interest in how these types of foods are made and the need for them in our diet and the, you know, flavor expansion.
I also think with, like, seasonality, people are starting to eat more local, more seasonal, and, you know, so if you want to have, you know, watermelon rind in the winter, you're going to put it up in the summer. So I think that people are getting more educated and realizing, you know, how important it is for them to, like, support their local food shed and their local farmers and local producers.
This is how people ate for thousands of years. From jars or the equivalent of it, you know, crocks or other vessels, you know, buried or put away or, you know, times of scarcity, feast and famine and those cycles.
Yeah.
I love the idea of, like, working with these invisible cycles mostly, you know, whether it's microbial or just seasonality. It's a lot of fun. Can make you feel
connected.
How does, in your business, kind of that traditional practice intersect or mesh or potentially clash with innovation in your space?
I think there are, they dovetail. What we do is a constant interpretation of so many other culturally rich traditions that we are happy to be the current interpreters of in what we make. So definitely dovetails with innovation. The process of fermentation that keeps it alive, I guess, is the part that is most traditional for us. It's, you know, now aided through the fermentation slowing device, aka refrigerator, but besides that, it's, you know, same way it was done long ago. Times of abundance, putting it up and eating from it until the food comes back.
Awesome. Let me shift gears for a quick second. I want to talk a little bit about the brine that you guys are pushing out right now. How did the idea to do that come about? What's the process been like trying to market something like brine, which is not necessarily, I don't know, something people are used to buying?
Right, yeah. Well, the brine of your pickle jar is the most delicious part of the product. It's got all the spices. There's so much goodness to it. So there was a lot of reasons why we decided to put it in a can, but one was we saw so many people getting rid of their pickle juice and not drinking, you know, just eating their product and then throwing out this delicious brine. So we just started to repurpose it in a number of ways. We were, like, making salad dressings. We were selling it to local bars, doing collaborations with local mixologists. And then one day, yeah, we just kind of light bulb went off, and we were like, this would be really great to... We were also drinking a ton of it, you know, just out of the jar, so...
Just straight up, yeah.
Yeah. So, and that's not very, you know, I mean, it's okay, but it's...
It's a little rustic.
Yeah. So, yeah, we were just like, one day, like, let's put this in a can, and that was that.
I imagine it's, like, really good for you.
It is, yeah. I mean, if I'm feeling sluggish, I always drink like half of a can, and you know, it gives you kind of the same kind of pick me up as coffee does. It kind of just replenishes your electrolytes, and but in a more holistic way, and I don't know, just kind of gives you that upper you need at 3 p.m.
Yeah,
so brilliant.
And so we're here at the Good Food Awards Mercantile Show, and the Good Food Foundation is all about recognizing businesses that are not just making great products, but that are also producing sustainably and ethically. So how do you feel about being part of this guild of producers, and what are you doing that you feel like is the best fit for the Good Food Awards?
Well, I think that's worthy of a cross-heritage shout-out to the Greenhorns. They're doing a lot of work in, along those lines and in good ways. And we're doing what we can here in the Mid-Atlantic, working with a lot of local, a lot of young farmers. We every year support Future Harvest, and newly this year we're supporting their young farmer training program, which is really cool. We've been attending it for a lot of years. I always thought maybe that I would be a farmer, but somehow we're fermenters. But yeah, I mean, finding new ways to feed people in the region that they're grown in sustainable ways. And so we source from local organic farms, and the farmer comes to us with an abundance of something that maybe they didn't sell at market. We try to pay them for it and find an outlet for that with our eatership.
That's awesome. Yeah. I think just making like a good, fun, clean product is awesome. You know, and that's kind of what's made us win our Good Food Awards. You know, if you look at the back of our labels, in our Bloody Mary mix, there's 6 ingredients. Most Bloody Mary mix, if you look at the back of their labels, there's about 25 ingredients. So I think it's just about being, you know, really transparent, sustainable, making your product as clean as possible. And I think that's the way that you could obtain a good food award.
To that end, we just started the B Corp certification.
Oh, nice.
And I was really fascinated to learn that we're pretty much a B Corp already, but we just haven't gone through all the paperwork of it. But that was really heartening to learn. But I think for consumers to be able to relate to without, you know, a 10-minute interview about where your ethos lies, seeing a little symbol, you know, whatever, you know, it is for your audience. But for us, I think that they'll be really helpful.
I'm not going to let you get off the hook, Sarah, without telling everybody about your new podcast.
Oh, yes. Awesome. So thanks to Jack and the Lion Hotel, I'll be doing a podcast shortly here. Now, what's it, May 1st or something?
Next month.
Yeah.
Be on the lookout.
But you're excited to get some of these DC stories? And
I'm super excited, yeah. And definitely I'm going to reach out across the country, not just in DC, about people doing really great things and how they did it, how they built it.
Awesome. Well, keep an eye out for that. And keep tuning in for more from us here at Heritage Radio Network at the Good Food Mercantile here at Union Market, D.C., Dock 5 technically. Shane, Sarah, thank you both so much.
Thank you.
We didn't even have to sing.
Would you
sing? There's time.
Sing?
There's time.
Will you sing us into our break?
Can we beatbox? We can beatbox.
Yeah. And we'll be right back. Back at the Heritage Radio Network, live coverage here of the Good Food Mercantile at Union Market, D.C., at Dock 5, actually, here in Washington, D.C. Been having a wonderful day, jam-packed full of great interviews, and I'm really, really excited to actually pass the mic over to Jennifer Isham, who's the Director of Strategy for Union Market.
Hi.
Hey, Jennifer. We met yesterday and talked about doing radio, and now here you are, jumping into the pool.
It happened fast.
Very fast. So you'll be chatting with some incredible cheese guests that are sitting right in front of us. We have Elena Santogade. See, I'm going to give it the Italian pronunciation.
That's totally fine.
And Eli Cairo. So I'll let Jennifer take it from here.
So Eli, we met yesterday, and you did a panel about starting a small business. So I haven't met you, but I've tried your products, which are amazing. So
thanks.
I just wanted to have both of you just tell us a little bit about your businesses and what you do. And
sure. Cool.
We'll start with you.
I'm Eli Cairo. I started Olympia Provisions in 2009. I'm a charcuterie maker, and I do pretty much everything with pork. 2009, I had a small 900-square-foot one-man meat plant. I won 4 Good Food Awards that year.
Can you tell us what you were going to do when you, how broke you were that you were going to do something else? And
yes.
Tell us about that?
Yeah, exactly. I was, being my one-man plant, I was working every moment, as you can imagine, being a one-man show in a meat plant, and I was really, really broke and never made any money yet, and I was really thinking about becoming a barista, like a moonlighting in the morning as a barista, then meat processor in the day, and my sister happened to send out my meat products. I won the 4 Good Food Awards, and then I started meeting Sam from Buyride, my first conversations with Whole Foods. Oh, it was just such a very pivotal and amazing moment when I met the Good Food Awards. And now...
You didn't have to be a barista.
Thank God, because that would have sucked. I suck with people, let's be honest. Way better with dead pigs and sausages.
We all have our strengths.
Yeah, exactly. Mine just happen to be cold, dead animals. That's fine. anyways, now fast forward till now. I won my 12th Good Food Award. I have 5 restaurants and 40,000-square-foot meat plant. 17 farmers markets a week, a catering business, and around 200 employees. And then I get to be here drunk in the middle of the day talking about sausages.
Oh, excellent. Okay, great. Elena, over to you. Okay.
Well, to follow that up, I'm Elena Santigade from Grafton Village Cheese in Vermont. So we have a very different story in the sense that Grafton is quite established. We've been around for a really long time making mostly aged cheddars, but also sheep's milk cheeses. And, you know, with any business, we've gone through many different iterations. I mean, Grafton technically has been around since the turn of the 20th century, so that's kind of a while ago. And then since the 1960s, we've been doing what we do now in some form or another, and we're actually owned by a nonprofit foundation called the Wyndham Foundation. And the foundation's mission is to support Vermont's rural agricultural communities. So a big way that we do that as the cheesemaking arm is to buy milk from local farms in Vermont. And then we make the cheese, and the rest is delicious.
And our family, do you have a family business like Eli does?
I think it feels like a family at Grafton Village Cheese, just because Vermont, small town Vermont, how could you not have that feeling? But no, it's sort of grown beyond that over the years.
And do you now, like, they're definitely in every business, like the ups and downs of the business and what you're talking about in Vermont. Right now, do you see the business, is it growing, or are you having problems that a lot of other farmers are having in Vermont?
You know, for us, we feel like we have a lot of growth happening right now. I mean, I'm one of a team of sales managers for Grafton Village Cheese, and I do the New York City, Philadelphia area, that sort of general, sort of very specific region. But for us, the big exciting thing these days is our cave-aged program, where we're expanding our capabilities in that realm, and then also really just sort of across the board raising our profile with the aged cheddars that we do. So it's fun to work with a product and with a company that's had a lot of exposure in the market, and you kind of go through these cycles of being the older kid on the block.
Right, and then someone invents something, and
right,
like there's a
right.
new thing and flavor.
And then you kind of try out through some R&D process. We have some sheep's milk stuff that's really exciting, and some of those are like the new kids on the block. So it's a really fun cycle that we get to be a part of.
So yesterday, like, you're telling me that you started doing some cheese. When you started, before you did Olympia, you worked with a guy who did cheese all the time in this village.
Yeah.
And so have you ever wanted to diversify, or you just stayed where you are? Like, does that ever happen to both of you, that like when you're so specific in one area that you really want to diversify your food choices?
No, well, for me, meat is my, like, it's what I eat, drink, and think. It's like my thing. So I never have thought about ever brewing, you know, brewing beer or anything. I'm a meat maker, but I did do my apprenticeship in Switzerland in a very cheese-heavy village, and my neighbors were all, you know, Alpen cheese makers, and I was only supposed to be in my apprenticeship for 6 months, and the way that I figured I would be able to stay longer, so I made myself very valuable to everybody in the community. So, you know, like on my hours off, I'd run across the street and I would, you know, brush cheese or rotate cheese or feed hay to the cows, and I really, the cheese making process was kind of the reason why I do what I do. I realize that it's just a very beautiful lifestyle that they live, you know, focusing on a product every day, making sure their raw ingredients are made. It really took from a cheesemaker to realize that I love the process of meat making and wanted to make sure it was my livelihood.
Very meditative.
Very.
Right?
I mean, you got to be like, I say that always with a true processor, you got to be like such a fan of monotony. Like if you're not ready to stand at a table and listen to bad sports radio for like 8 hours a day and do the same thing, you're in the wrong field, you know? Yeah.
I think what's so interesting about everyone that has their thing mm-hmm. is that there's a reason they have it. And so, like, why do you guys think you have it, and what do you think your appreciation is for it?
Well, I think for us at Grafton, I mean, so much of what we do is so focused on aged cheddar. And it's funny because we were really excited this year to have some accolades from the Good Food Awards on one of our cheddar cheeses that we make with the 100% Jersey cow milk from Springbrook Farm, Queen of Quality cheddar, and then also our 100% sheep's milk cheese called Bear Hill. And so it's interesting, as a company that's been very focused on making one style of cheese making, not just cheese, but particularly one style, to be branching out into the sheep's milk realm and doing different different types of cheeses in that sense, and then getting accolades for them is I think really fun for our cheesemakers.
With all like the sexy cheeses, like everyone thinks that cheddar's not that sexy anymore. Like it's still sexy. I mean,
think about a cloth bound cheddar. You need to derobe the cheese before you eat it. I mean, what's sexier than undressing a cloth bound cheddar?
True.
Okay, you win. Excellent. Okay. Yeah. Can you beat that? Okay, let's hear about like your meats. Let's go. But do you have a
peel
like,
that casing off?
Is there like a flavor now that's like in vogue? Does that happen with
in
your
meat?
Products?
Gosh, you know, I don't know. I got into charcuterie making because, you know, when I first came back to America, this was what, 14 years ago after living in, you know, 5 years, I was trying charcuterie and there wasn't anything very delicious personally. You know, it was a different game back there. The cheese game is way more advanced. You know, we've been eating soft bloomy rind cheeses in America now for 20 years. There's still not very many salami producers that are producing bloomy rind salamis like I am. And so, I mean, I think I got into it because, well, it was what I did, but I remember very vividly walking around the farmer's market in Portland with my sister, getting Rogue's blue cheese, you know, smoked salmon, amazing organic food, amazing natural wine. Beer was way ahead, and I'm like, let's get a stick of salami. And she's like, I don't know if anybody makes salami. And I was like, oh, wait a second.
I got something.
But I do.
Yeah,
and yeah, she looked at me, and she's like, you're crazy. Nobody's going to eat this high fatty meat covered in mold. And I was like, you're probably right. Yeah. Let's give it a go. And so, yeah.
How much do you have to educate consumers and distributors and restaurateurs for your products?
Oh, I would say, you know, that's a huge part of it. And I do think that in the last 10 to 15 years on the cheese side of things, I mean, the American buyer and the American chef have come so far. Their IQ is so much higher than it was. And even now, you know, the consumers share a lot of that knowledge. People are interested in whether a cheese is pasteurized or raw. They might be excited about the fact that a raw milk cheese can express some sense of place, some terroir like wine does. People want to know who produces the cheese and how, and I just find like the level of curiosity across the board is very inspiring, and it's exciting for us because if you're, you know, making cheese or making charcuterie in the right ways, you have a great story to tell, and there's a lot of history and a lot to inform the process. So the more we can share that with our customers and the final customer, the better we all are.
Totally. It's like actually right now what we're doing is it, like the Good Food Awards.
Right here at the Good Food Awards.
Right here, this interview, people interested even in hearing our story a decade ago, this wasn't happening. I mean, like, what, how old is the Good Food Awards now?
Right.
7 years, 8 years? And they're pretty much the only awards group that is celebrating responsibly made, not only delicious, but very responsibly made awesome food. So
right.
This show, meeting people, I mean, it's still happening. I met my first customer in South Dakota, and he knew everything about my products. Like
pretty wild.
You know, it's just amazing to me.
Right, yeah. Well, it's like fans. I mean, the thing that a lot of the people that are here that are buying for their supermarkets or grocery stores or restaurants or whatever, they all are fans of the Good Food Awards because the Good Food Awards kind of does the work for them.
Yeah.
And they really vet the people.
Absolutely.
And you guys are the best of the best.
It's a major filter, and it's a great room to be in. I mean, you go around from table to table, and it's just one astounding product after another. So,
yeah,
okay,
absolutely.
So for our listeners, if you have one business advice for all those people out there that are dreaming of starting their own business like you guys, what do you think? What's your piece of advice?
I mean, Grafton has been established for so much longer than since I've been a part of it, but I would say, you know, every day, if you can have an entrepreneurial mindset, no matter how established your business is, whether or not it's just an idea or if you're walking into a group of people that have been doing something well for a long time, never being afraid to try the new thing, I think is a...
Yeah, I guess I always kind of go back to just remember why you got into it. You know, I always think if I wouldn't be doing this, I'd be a barista and hating my life. So, you know, like I went into it with the idea of making these beautiful meats and supporting farms and hopefully changing the community around me. And now that, you know, if you keep working at your true core values of giving good livelihoods to your employees, making sure your farmers are happy and making the best product you can, it's very rewarding. And there's sometimes it's a dark place and you have to work through that, but it'll pay back. Just buckle down and get after it.
That's great. Anything else you guys want to say? It's been a great interview.
Yeah, thanks for everything you do at Heritage Radio, and thanks so much for having us. You guys are amazing.
Thanks for putting the spotlight on this world.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jennifer, for guest hosting. We will be back shortly with more coverage from Good Food Mercantile here at Union Market. Stay tuned.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.